Hello and welcome to Writing About Dragons and Shit, a podcast where two authors and a writer get together and talk about the ways that they tell stories. I'm one of your hosts, Trevor Bettis, writer of Idle Champions of the Forgotten Realms and host of Too Many Podcasts, and with me each week are two amazing people who are...
I'm Erin M. Evans. I write fantasy novels. I am best known for the Brimstone Angels saga and the Books of the Usurper.
It is I, B. Dave Walters, friend of all mankind. You can find me all over the interwebs where fine streaming content can be located, and also writing screenplays and novels and teaching classes about screenplays and novels and comic books and words and stuff.
He's doing all the things.
It's true. It's a voluminous amount of stuff. Like, literally, right before we went live, I was like, hey, you guys, I was doing a thing today. And they're like, cool. And I'm like, and here's a link. And they're like, is this the thing? And I'm like, no, it's a different thing. And they were like, oh, is it that other thing you mentioned? I'm like, that was yet an additional thing. An unrelated thing.
Stacks.
Yeah.
I keep a lot of plates spinning.
So much. Yeah. It's hard to keep up. To be fair, no one can keep up with you, so
it's hard for me to keep up, and I do it all. Yeah, so that's yeah. Ooh, hold on, Trevor. Hmm? This might be calling my name later.
That will stay in the video. Sure. Yeah. Yes. Well, hello, listeners. We're on our currently last of the backlog of listener questions, and I may have taken a poor inventory last time, and we may only have four of them this time. So if this one's a little bit shorter, that's why. But we're gonna go through these and answer them to the best and fullest of our abilities. You guys want to just dive into some questions?
I'm going to say two things first. One, we are, in fact, low on questions. That means you know what to do, dear listener. Two, every time we're like, oh, we won't talk long about this at all. Those are some of the longest episodes.
Accurate.
Actually, I do want to say two things here. One, I found an email about someone asking about possibly being a guest, and I just found that tonight, and I'm so sorry I didn't get back to you. I've been terrible about answering things recently. I will get back to you tomorrow. But also, last episode, we made a joke about something with our name with the Wu-Tang Clan, and one of our amazing listeners, Rick, made a logo of a mashup of Writing About Dragons and Shit and Wu-Tang Clan, and it's my favorite thing ever.
Yeah, brought a lot of joy to my heart with that one.
Most confusing text.
Oh, yeah. I sent the image to our group text, and apparently Aaron's phone went, you don't
for
get
some
to see
reason
this.
My phone was just like, no, I'm not doing pictures. So I got B-Dave screaming, like,
yeah,
and I was like, is that a good scream or a bad scream? Did you see a spider? Did you win an award? And he's like, oh, it's good. And I was like, cool, what's it gonna be? And he didn't say, so I sent some celebratory emojis, and I waited. I was like, maybe it's private, I guess he'll tell me eventually. And then And then you're like, who do I tag about this? And I'm like, what is Chris talking about? I never figure out what's going on.
But now you have seen the gloriousness.
But now it's hilarious. Yes. And I have seen the gloriousness. It is beautiful.
Wu-Tang is in fact for the children.
If you want to see it, listeners, you can find it on our Twitter and Blue Sky. Yes, I'm calling it Twitter. I won't give a hell.
Is it on our Twitter? Because
when I was looking for something tonight. I saw that he also posted on there, so I gave it a retweet.
Oh. Fantastic. Yes.
But yes, so now with that out of the way, let's hop into the question.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, so here is our first question. What would you do if you just realized your story was actually just fantasy The Matrix, like the exact same thing? I know you've discussed things like change of 20%, but what does that look like in practice? Thanks again. You guys are the coolest ever. Zach.
I am tempted to just straight up use this example of like, okay, you've realized you've written The Matrix, but fantasy. What do you do to change it to 20%?
I mean, I'd say one of two things. On a certain level, you may well be fucked if you literally wrote The Matrix. That may just be that. But the fact that it's fantasy may already be a 20% change, because there's lots of stories that are the same story. That's the hero's journey.
Yeah.
This is the part where I point out that The Matrix and Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings and Star Wars are all the exact same story. So you might be good.
Yeah, like that's the thing is that once you say, but it's fantasy, it's already pretty damn different.
Yeah.
Because if it's fantasy, I'm assuming it's not, the sort of technology that's turned into the overlords and that humans aren't exactly batteries. Like there's gonna be different words for all of these things. And yeah, you're already kind of moving away from what it is, especially if it's the kind of thing like I think a lot of times writers worry that they've done something that's too close to something else, and the vast majority of the time it is nothing like that. Then you also sometimes have people who go in a very mercenary way. I know I will take the Matrix and make it fantasy, and that's where maybe you have a little more of a concern. But that 20% doesn't look like as much as it seems like it should. You can do very like, and the other thing is like once you make a change like that to the setting, it is by its nature going to force changes in the story. Some stuff is just not going to make sense unless you adapt it to where you've kind of begun. So I feel like it will kind of solve itself.
Okay.
But like Peter's saying, like people, there are stories people like, and they want to see it in a new kind of
Oh,
way.
okay. I mean,
So,
just let me just say real
okay.
quick, Hunger Games and Twilight are the same story, and 50 Shades of Grey is Twilight fan fiction. So
Hunger Games and Twilight
what?
disagree, full disagree. That is
Oh,
not
you
the
a
same.
lame girl that can't choose between two good boys that
Oh
anomalously
my
becomes
God,
the
did you
face of a
actually read?
revolution.
Did you even read? If
But
this is a
you made
crappy love
Aaron just
triangle. You made
Aaron
completely
so
peaked out.
upset the noise gate took her.
Zoom was like, no, yeah. I said what I said, dear listener.
No, disagree.
I'm on your side, Aaron. Don't get me wrong. There
And
was.
vampires don't sparkle. Fuck both those
Well, I
movies.
mean, yeah. I mean,
Yeah,
fuck.
that I
Yeah.
agree
Yeah. Fuck
with.
that shit. Okay. Then tell you what, as because, Zach is asking, like, how do you do this in practice? So, B Dave, I'm going to throw this one at you. Let's say you're writing a sci-fi novel and you're like, well, I really want to have the villain be a Darth Vader-like, but not Darth Vader.
Dun dun dun.
So how do you take Darth Vader and change it 20%?
Well, let me start out by plus one in what Aaron said. I think that is when you what leads to chaos. I
Yeah.
think when you're like, I want to do Darth Vader, but not Darth Vader, that's when you got a problem. I think when you just write something that is dope that happens to be Darth Vader adjacent, you're probably fine. Because again, that's Sauron. Is Darth Vader.
Yeah, depending on what part of that is appealing to you, it's already very easy to slide away from it.
Lord Bell from Record of Lotus War is always is a great. If it's a big dude in a suit of black armor that it seems like nobody can beat, you're already there, whether or not he's anybody's father. I have shared with you guys though, and it's funny because this just came up yesterday. I took my youngest to Barnes and Noble, and because a book series she wanted, the new one was out. And we picked it up, and then we went over, and we were looking in the business section. And she's like, "You read a lot of business books." And I was like, "I do." And she's like, "Do you ever read good books?" And I was like,
Burn.
"I was like, this is a good book." And she's like, "No, that's not what I mean. I mean, you mean like fiction?" She's like, "Yeah." And I was like, "Well, one thing I know about myself is I unconsciously steal." Like what the last thing I read will be the next thing I write. It is something in me that I cannot help. And so that's why I actually don't read a ton of fiction for that exact reason. So, I guess to answer your question more specifically, my first thing I would say is it don't, because this is only going to lead to chaos. But if for some reason you had to, I would kind of break. I'm like, well, what makes Darth Vader Darth Vader? Is that he is a fallen hero? Is it that he's an evil super wizard? Is it that he is this unstoppable, cybernetic menace? Is it that he's a bad guy that still has secretly something still good in him? Is it the fact that he's got a hidden familial connection to one of the major characters? Is it that it in the absolute most clutch moment he will turn on the other bad guys and save everybody? I'd line out like five things you think that make Darth Vader Darth Vader, and then I change two or three of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think too, like paradoxically, the deeper those attributes are, the less it's going to look like you swiped it. If you do, the villain has a familial connection to the good guys. That's really classically Darth Vader. If you don't also add on big dude in black with a laser sword, nobody's gonna really see it. If he's a big dude in black with a laser sword and nothing else is the same, people are gonna go, you took Darth Vader much faster. So I think like asking yourself what you want here, if it's just the aesthetic, you definitely have to kind of pare down. Don't give him a laser sword is my first suggestion.
That's just good life advice, yeah.
Yeah, just generally that's the thing that people immediately go, oh, Star Wars. Because the other stuff can the other stuff, especially as you root it down, will become things that again affect the story and change and make it something that's not Darth Vader. It's its own thing.
I think if I would probably take it and turn it on its ear completely, because I think there's so many the big unstoppable guy wrapped in metal characters. I mean, when I've written my fair share, in fact, I was working on my electropunk novel that's the main bad guy like night before last.
I don't know why, but when you said that big guy wrapped in metal, all I heard in my head was, he's a super
That's yeah. That was a taxi
shredder.
Kevin Nash inside of that
Oh
suit. That
yeah,
was pretty
huh?
shredded. That
Yeah.
was so. For some reason, it occurred to me the other night. Freaking Rob Roy. Do you guys remember Rob Roy?
Yeah,
And how
vaguely. Yeah.
horrible Tim Roth is in Rob Roy. That
I
he's
don't remember
just,
this well enough.
the spoiled, entitled, foppish,
Yeah.
aristocrat. That is just a psychopathic monster. He's
Yeah.
just terrible. But he's all powdered and in his, lace and baby blue silks and things. Take it and turn it on its head completely.
Yeah.
I
I
like
like
that.
that.
I will say that there was a. I'm not gonna name names here, but there was. And I've talked to Aaron about this. There was a book that my wife was reading that did not change it 20%. It changed it like 5%. She was reading a book and she was like, yeah, this story has the vibes of this movie. And we were talking about the movie and hilariously, we ended up getting to like a little argument about one of the scenes. So she just straight up brings the scene up on YouTube. We watch the whole thing. I'm like, oh, you're right. I was totally wrong. You got me. And then she's like, she keeps reading and she goes, wait a minute. This is the same scene we just watched. And she starts reading it out loud. And like all that was changed in it was some dialogue of like, something that may have been existed in our world and like a fantasy name for that. But like it was the same argument, it was the same reasoning, everything.
That was sort of wild.
Yeah,
I
the
guess
fact
the
that that got through is just wow.
I mean, the real
That book
question
has a
is to
sequel coming out. I'm just
the
saying, I'm very
really.
curious.
I mean, the real question is to what extent did the author know, or is it so close you're like,
Oh, it's
yeah,
so
no.
close. You couldn't. There's zero chance that that happened.
Yeah.
What was when you were talking about how you don't read things because it influences you? I thought of Robert Kirkman of Walking Dead. When he decided he was going to write a zombie thing, he stopped watching and reading all zombie content, and it just so happened that the beginning of his comic was very close to 28 Days Later. I don't think it's one of those situations because it's real close. But Zach, I hope that helps with how to change things 20% or more.
Okay. Next question. Hello, mighty tangelic beings.
Oh, you guys are just like every week, just new aces.
Enjoying
So
it.
good. So what happens
I'm
when your listeners are
going.
writers?
This one is Zach as well. I'll just tell you that spoilers. I'm going to abuse your good graces by asking another question. What even is a writer's voice? Nobody knows. It doesn't mean anything as far as I can find. You look up what it is, and you get the softest, most wishy-washy answers. Look up how to develop your own voice, and people just spit in your face and tell you to grow up. Please be kind and give some actual advice on developing a voice. Thanks be unto you, Zach. P.S. I made my latest NPC, 3.5 D&D, an astral deva, tall, strong, and handsome, with charisma for days. He's named Bedave.
Oh.
Chaotic good.
Yay. We love a good deva.
I love it. I mean, I kind of want to start with saying, like, well, Zach, you kind of, you had a voice in that paragraph.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like, I mean, go ahead. You have it.
No, please.
I feel like this is one of those things that is incredibly fraught when you try to isolate it. It's very stressful to think about, but the actuality is it's, you don't have to actually work at this particularly. You develop your voice by writing. You hone your voice by trying new things and seeing what sounds good to you. The way you talk influences your voice. I remember one of the first times was when I worked at Wizards, and my coworkers read the short story in the anthology that we had just published, because we would do like a kind of like a postmortem occasionally and read books and sort of talk about how it went and stuff like that. And she's like, this sounds exactly like you. And I felt it was so strange because I wasn't trying to sound like I talked, but it comes through. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of little nuances about the words you choose and the things you choose and the phrases you use that all kind of come together when you're starting out. Like, and like B-Dave says, like, you can kind of lift things unconsciously, but especially when you're starting out, I know it's fairly common to sort of try out other people's voices. And I've even taken classes where they tell you to do it on purpose.
Yep.
So that you can kind of get a feel for, like, well, that feels weird. And where does it feel weird? Because that's not your voice. But it's not really something that you sit down and build, like, intentionally, I don't think. At least that I didn't. But I remember stressing about this so much when I was starting out that I didn't think I had a voice. And that the problem is you don't see your own voice, is my experience. Your own voice is just doy. That's how you write stuff down.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like style. I don't think you can set out to define your own style. I think it happens. But I will say, though, is I think it varies by genre, though. Yep. Like, I think if you read one of my horror movies and you read one of my family movies, I think there's probably a certain through line there, but that you might recognize. other than that, they're not going, they shouldn't seem too similar. I've done a bad job in one of them, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I think that's also very true. Like, your voice isn't necessarily static. It adapts to the project.
Yes.
So you can definitely sort of, and you can, when you get to a point where you sort of see it, you can kind of tune it on purpose.
Yeah.
Like without I think there's somewhere you get the vibe of the thing you're writing and you slide into the voice versus sitting down and going like, I'm going to do a really elevated voice here.
I shared with them a week or two ago. I was futzing around with an AI tool and I fed it something I wrote and I was like, analyze this, and it gave me my style back and I was like, holy shit, that is my style. That is how I do things. The computer knows. But for what it's worth, I don't think it's like a singer's voice. Like, I think a singer has a certain amount of range. But Beyonce can't sound like Barry White. Like, she can't. Whereas I think writers have more flexibility, at least, you know, theoretically, if you have that talent. Not everyone does. I will say how your ability to mimic other people's stuff is only really important if you intend to work on, like, collaborative things. If you intend to do a lot of co-writing, or if you want to write comic books or like a long series or something where you have to, like, seamlessly plug into something. But if it's just telling your own story, you just do your thing, man.
Yeah. It is definitely, it's a thing that, like, I don't think any author sits down and goes, all right, let me get into my voice. Like it's that thing that's just how you write. That's just how you write. And like Aaron said, that's just how you write this project.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think, like, I was going through my head, I was like, what two books like what books would I say has like a distinctive voice? And the two that I came up with are both comedies. It's Good Omens and Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Those books have extremely distinctive voices to the point that like before I even knew what like a writer's voice was, I noticed it in Good Omens. When you've got a run-on sentence the length of a paragraph just talking about Crowley's Bentley, you know, that is Terry Pratchett's style. I think that one was Gaiman, but anyway. I do think that writing in a writer's style can be helpful. I did it a few times, and it wasn't to help me build my own or anything like, because again, it's just what happens when you write. It was finding what a author's voice sounded like. Like not to completely mimic it or take from it, but just to be able to look at something and go, that's their voice. I can see what that looks like now.
Well, let me ask you something, because I haven't read Good Omens. Is it very, very clearly apparent when Terry Pratchett's writing and when Neil Gaiman's writing?
Not too much. So. There, like I would say, you'd be able to catch Pratchett more than Gaiman.
I think it's more evident in a line than a like a chapter kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that in and of itself is an exercise in voice. Yeah. You know, averaging yourselves out to create like a homogenous thing.
Yeah. I mean, I've definitely read some books where that did not happen between two authors writing a novel.
I'm actually working on a project right now. It's a TTRPG thing, and I had to submit 30,000 words for it. And I tried to make it kind of a little, I won't say generic, but agnostic. That, it, yeah. You know, this could get plugged into a book, and hopefully the reader won't be like, oh, this is the part where B-Dave's writing. You know? Hopefully. It's so much so, I'm afraid that they may come back to me and be like, add a little zazz, because I mean, it is pretty much right over the plate. Sorry,
you paid for the B-Dave Walters experience.
Right, exactly. I was like, I will tear the sleeves off this shirt right now. Yes.
So you just gave us the meat. There was no seasoning.
it's salt and pepper, but there's no oregano. There's no garlic, though. Yeah, right. Yeah. It was marinated. It was basted, though.
But yeah, Zach, just like this is one of those times where it's like, you know, it's that annoying answer where it's just like, how do I become a better writer? Right. Like it unfortunately is like probably the best thing to do in this situation is just keep writing.
I think I have an additional piece of advice because I'm thinking back, right? And I actually have this memory now that I realize, sometimes when I was writing, I would come up with these metaphors that were a little bit weird and I would pull them because I thought nobody's going to get this. It's too weird. Mm-hmm. And then it was so funny. I wrote a story and my professor, like I left one in and he highlighted it like the air buzzes like a fist of insects. And he's like, this is so good. And I was like, oh, it's not too bizarre. Like, it's not full of insects is what I should be saying. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't have that kind of condensed thing. And I started just leaving them in. And so that's something else is like, you might have an urge to do something and it's not like within the sort of standard, clear, definite rules. You're bending things, you're breaking things, or it's unexpected in a way that you think, oh, this will be confusing or something. Try it out. And that might be part of, you know, your voice might be something that sort of pushes on those boundaries. Don't be afraid of that, because I think that's a good way to kind of erase it.
Also, something that I hate, but not mm-hmm. for the reasons that you might think, is the fact that everything that we're like, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that. It's like, yeah, you can. Yeah. Once you're famous, people just call it style. Yeah. Like, it's like Cormac McCarthy is unreadable to me. Ugh. Unreadable. And people are like, this is genius. I'm like, you bastards are just being pretentious because you know he's a good storyteller. She's like, it must be cool. They're the people in the art gallery with the berets and ascots staring at a banana hanging in a frame and are like, it is a commentary on capitalism. No, it isn't. No, it isn't. Yeah. So.
I do think that if you get to a place where you're, even when you get to a place where you're allowed to bend some rules, you're still going to deal with copy editors reminding you that they're not actually accurate. So get used to the word stet. It's a handy little thing. They're doing their job, but they are going to tell you every time, just for the record.
You know, I wonder if I wonder if whoever was the copy editor on the road, did they even try? Did they even try?
Man, at that point, I don't know, right? Because like, if you're like, we know we're gonna sell piles of these books.
Yeah.
Don't piss off Mr. McCarthy.
Yeah.
Like, I could totally see them being like, no, just don't. Just you're looking for clear typos and transpositions. Whereas maybe even at that point, like sometimes you get authors and they have like, you know, copy editors that get them that they like working with. So I don't know. That's a good question. Like if you're a copy editor and you get handed House of Leaves, what happens?
Oh my God.
I mean, unfortunately, somebody had to do though, it. And I think this is what makes me mad is that no one on earth could turn in House of Leaves as their first book.
No.
The exact same book. Word for word, line for line, and be like, here you go, I did a thing.
You get
laughed out of the room.
That would hit a trash bin like faster than the speed of light.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Good Lord.
Are you ready for the next one?
I want to get away from the thought of having to copy edit House of Leaves as fast as possible.
Hey, Tangerinos. Long-time listener, first-time questioner. I wanted to ask you guys about pacing. Is there any strategy you use to make sure things are moving at a good rate, or is it more of a gut feeling? I've been submitting short stories to publishers, and the feedback I've received more than once is that I need to speed things up. I recently...
Sorry, I just saw the mic because B-Dave's face right now.
I saw Trevor jump away, and I looked over and caught B-Dave's... The look in BD's. I'm going to get through this question faster because I want to know what's happening.
I'm going to look away.
Okay. I've been submitting short stories to publishers, and the feedback I've received more than once is that I need to speed things up. I recently received similar feedback on the opening chapters of my novel, too. I'm finding it difficult to get a good balance on getting my story running quickly while also allowing some time for table setting, character introductions, etc. Any shareable wisdom on this would be super appreciated. Len, P.S. Obligatory gushing. Your podcast keeps my writing present in my mind, even when work and life in general try to get in the way. Thank you for always being there to share in the fun.
Yeah. Thanks, Len.
I'm going to let you guys respond first because you already know what I'm about to say.
I see. Now I just want to be like, let's take bets about what is the pacing comes out of my head fully formed.
I was about to say, feel free to pause this episode and write down, take your bets on what it is that I'm going to say.
Aaron, you go ahead.
Okay. So pacing is definitely important. Part of storytelling and occasionally a tricky beast. Some of it comes down to your genre and what your readers are expecting. Sometimes this is, I will say this as a caveat, sometimes the pacing is a very easy way to pass on something without getting too deep into it. So if you're getting told the pacing, but that's not the only thing, it might be one of those, or it might be about a particular part, but this sounds like it's a consistent problem. So I think the main thing is that those things you talk about, the sort of the table setting, the character introductions, those really ought to be folded into stuff happening as much as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, if characters are doing something, you can introduce them at the same time. And the times I've seen the pacing be so clearly the problem is when the only thing that scene is there for is to get everybody's name down. You don't have to do that. You can have multiple things happening, and that will definitely pick up the pace. Particularly in fantasy, there is a kind of a drive for a strong through line, meaning like we get to a story and we get the story moving. So there that is sort of counterbalanced by a desire for a world that's not here, which means you do have to kind of make space to sort of explain things and get people to love the characters that are going through this strong through line. But that is where the skill of sort of stacking those elements comes in. B. Dave. I don't want to leave you so long.
No, Trevor, whatever Trevor wants to say.
I just don't want you to like implode or anything.
So yeah, I mean, obviously, plus one, everything Aaron said there. I would say you've had people read your work, and if they're just saying like, "Oh, the pacing isn't working for me," ask them like, "What about the pacing is it?" Like, if it's like, you're showing the walking between them getting from, point A to point B, but you could just do that in one sentence, that's one thing. If it's like what Aaron was saying, where you're just focusing too much on character description, like having that stand out in its own page or so, that's breaking up, the flow of whatever chapter you're telling it in, that can be a whole other thing. Pacing is one of those things that I do feel like you get better at. Sorry, that was so funny. Aaron
I
trying to
wrote
hold
down, I realized I wrote down my answer and then I held it up and I forgot I still had my green screen on.
So yeah, we just got like a D&D book
Look,
cover suddenly.
it's
Yeah.
PD in dragon form.
It's true. It's a me doing a nom. You can write it in this chat though. We'll see it.
There you go. There you go. So yeah, talking to those people about what specifically of the pacing didn't work for them, is definitely my suggestion for it. Pacing is one of those things that I do find that you get better and better at as you are going. I said on a recent episode that I started off with short stories and then moved up to novels, and figuring out pacing from there to chapters to sections to a whole book was not the easiest thing to do. So definitely keep working at it, but if you're lucky enough to have people read this, get as much information out of them as you can. B Dave, the long-awaited.
Okay, so Lynn, thank you for submitting the question. You seem lovely. You seem lovely,
I
Lynn.
still can't read it.
It's not, it's on the other
Oh,
side. I'm gonna turn it
it's on
around
the
when
other
he says
side.
it.
Wait, here, I'm gonna cover my eyes. You can show Trevor. Just tell me when to look here.
Okay.
Tell me when to look.
Okay,
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 you go
okay,
look.
okay.
You
All
look.
right, great. Okay, so couple things, Lynn. Let me start at the soft side and then I'll move to the other side. Maybe the thing that you need to look at is maybe you should be working on writing a novel instead of a short story. If you really have this, because he says short stories, right? Is
No,
that what he
no.
said?
He
I think
said
I.
short stories and novels. I have this problem.
Oh, right. Well, I was going to say the problem with that is you still got to get down to it, or people aren't necessarily going to indulge you for long. So it doesn't necessarily solve your problem, but it would have at least given you a little longer track to take off. I'm going to go ahead and say I foresee as a holy man that you've been pantsing these things. That you're sitting down and writing what you think is interesting while you're setting this, what you're saying is table setting, and the reader and the consumer of this content doesn't care. The problem with a lot of table setting is until you do or say something that makes people give a shit, it doesn't matter. There's a reason why in Star Wars, the movie starts with the Corellian cruiser and a Star Destroyer, and Darth Vader blocking things with his light. Well, he doesn't lightsaber; he kills him with the Force. But Darth Vader starts out doing Darth Vader shit and kidnaps the princess before you go to Tatooine, before you go and see the kid with the boring life on the farm, right? So,
So boring.
Is it? He wanted to go to Tosche
Gotta
Station.
get the power converters.
Does he need you? All I gotta do is drink all this blue milk. So, I would say, make sure you have your outline, tighten up your outline, make sure you have your beats, tighten up your beats. And then there's actually something you can go, if you Google novel beat sheet calculator, they save the cat. It applies to novels the whole time anyway, but they've now written Save the Cat Writes a Novel because it's ways to cash in because Blake Snyder's dead. So you can type in how many pages your book is going to be, and it will tell you by which page you need to be hitting which point. And you will know that by if you tell it's like, "I want to do these things," it's like, "Hey, check this out. By page five, you should be saying clearly what the theme is. By page 10, you should have introduced everybody. By page 25, you should have introduced the B stories." Like, have your framework tightened down, because if you just sit down at the keyboard and kind of wax poetic and philosophical, unfortunately, the free market is telling you that that is not what they want. Especially because all things being equal, to Aaron's point, you know, the pacing is important because not only do you need the rising and falling action over the whole narrative, you need the rising and falling action in each chapter. Part of the reason why James Patterson is so popular is it's all these page turners that end on a little cliffhanger, little short chapters, all with a cliffhanger that you just have to know what the next thing is. Like he walked through the door and you're like, fuck, I want to go to bed. And then the spy says, I'll tell you what really happened. And you're like, ah, you know, like you don't necessarily have to do that, but you would be better served if you get to it faster than you don't get to it fast enough. Okay, let me see, Aaron. Yep, structure.
I was gonna say, what's another way of saying what you said?
Yeah, structure. Yeah, no. I would say one, my friends understand me on an intrinsic level, but two, they've heard me give this rant, you know, literally over 100 times now. Yeah, I guarantee you, Lynn, if you, I'm gonna foresee you don't even have an outline. Feel free to submit a different question, but even if you do have an outline, tighten that outline up. You know? And you'll get there.
I went to that novel calculator thing. That is interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I do want to be like super clear that is one way to do it, and it is a very helpful way if you're trying to like get your head wrapped around it.
Yes.
But if you wrote a book and it's working, and then you try to plug it in and it doesn't match exactly, that's okay.
Yeah. Like,
novels work in other ways. But I just want to be super clear about that because it's an incredibly valuable tool. Yep. Not knocking that.
Well,
but
I mean specifically for this guy that is keep getting told that he has a pacing thing. That will solve a pacing thing.
That is a good way to check it.
I will just say the reason why the Save the Cat framework is invaluable for a screenplay and is nice and useful for a novel, but by no means necessary for a novel, is screenplays have very strict structures. Like you got to be done in 85 minutes or 90 minutes or 120 minutes. And like, that's what you have. So you must hit certain points at certain times in your page count, or your movie will not land where it needs to land. And it just won't work. Like it will fall apart strategically. It will be a three-legged, or I was gonna say a three-legged dog. And then I went with a three-legged stool, but I'm like, a stool is supposed to have three legs. So, it won't be structurally sound in a way that novels do not have to be like that at all. However, what I will say they have to have in common is you've got to make people give a damn quickly.
Yes.
Because, you know, not everybody
continue giving a damn.
Exactly.
It's a lot of holding attention with a novel.
Yep. Because, you know, not everybody's going to give you a 3-chapter mulligan. And then midway in the middle, if you detour through like discussing the banquet too much, like again, before his untimely death with his opus unfinished, George R. R. Martin was so famous for the food descriptions and the things that he would do in the banquets and how he would describe them. But as nice as all of those food descriptions are like a paragraph.
Oh, I skipped them so many times.
Yeah. You get an idea that you're there. I mean, there was enough partridge with plum sauce that I was like, I get it. I agree. It didn't matter to me either, but it's like the songs in The Hobbit, like it's your thing or it's not your thing. But even so, it's short. You know, it's like here's this very in-depth, you know, fairly contained description.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hope that
one
helped.
One more.
Yep. Finish strong. Power through.
Do it. Okay. About dragons. I love the show. I'm working on my first novel. Here's a listener question. Superheroes have been wildly successful in TV movies and are dominant in comics. Why do you think superhero novels aren't more of a thing? Kevin.
Yeah, this one came to us from Twitter.
You know,
that explains why it's so brief.
Yes.
You know, obviously this is something that I've put a lot of thought into. And I think, you know, I don't know, but I think those things are so deeply embedded in a visual medium that is just how the audience has been conditioned to consume it. Jim Butcher wrote a great Spider-Man novel. Yeah. You know, I've read a handful of superhero novels in my time. But you know, that is my theory. This is similar to, I think I've shared that at least in the TTRPG space, people don't play long-term sci-fi campaigns, and they don't consume long-term sci-fi content. And I've really been trying to puzzle around why. And something somebody pointed out, and I think this is true, is we've been conditioned to consume science fiction passively, with Star Wars and Star Trek and those things generally being more popular than fantasy over time. You know, generally, every once in a while you get the Lord of the Rings and whatnot. But I mean, there haven't really been like iconic multi-generational science fiction television franchises that we could kind of get used to doing. So it's easier to think that, well, I'm going to go live those things, or I'm going to immerse myself vicariously in a book because I'm used to imagining it anyway. Like reading a book and imagining something fantastical and playing D&D is still imagining something fantastical, versus I've been watching Star Wars, I've been watching Star Trek. The call to want to go live it is not quite the same. So I've been looking at pictures of Spider-Man and Batman and Superman and even movies and even cartoons that it doesn't quite translate to a novel, especially because if you've got a great story that would make a great novel, you know what else it would make? A great limited series or a great graphic novel.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah.
I've thought about this a bit as well, and I do fully agree with you about the visual medium thing. And like a little bit more into it, like, superheroes, they're pretty much known for having their outfit, right? Like that, that is like all these incredible superheroes, like Superman's got his blue suit with the S, you know, and Batman's got his, well, you know, blue or black, depending on which one it is.
It's black, but yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, but like, God damn it, that really threw me off. But it's like, you know, imagine you'd never seen Spider-Man before, and then, you know, someone wrote a novel about Spider-Man and tried to describe that suit. You'd get the gist of it, but you wouldn't see it as it is on the comic cover and everything like that, with the little details that the artist is putting into it. And I feel like that is a big part of superheroes for us.
Yeah.
I have read a few superhero books. And the other thing that I found with it is pacing. Where, like, with a comic book or a movie, like, you know, it starts off, Spider-Man's fighting Shocker. I'm gonna use Spider-Man a lot. I love Spider-Man. He's my favorite superhero.
Hey,
and you know, he's fighting Shocker, and you know, they're bouncing around and everything. And then that 5-minute scene is over, and we're on to Peter at school or something like that. Whereas in a book, like, we're sitting there for, you know, like a chapter or two, depending on how big the opening thing is.
Don't want to fight scene that's a chapter long, guys.
Well, see, and that's the thing. Is
sorry,
that
sorry.
Those
are personal opinions.
The one that I read, Spidey swings in on the wall, surveys the area, drops down, talks to the police person, swings in, takes an inventory of the henchmen, and all of this in character, in thought, and everything like that. And it was so slow for me.
Yeah.
Yep.
This is the thing I think is probably the biggest hurdle for a superhero novel, is that what we understand as superhero comics, even movies, the superhero movies are based off the stories that work in comics. And so that's a very short kind of story. It is a story that needs to be able to be told through visuals. Mm-hmm. And a novel is not going to have visuals. And if you have a normal traditional novel, there's no visuals. And another thing is there's a lot of headspace, and that's different times, right? You have thought bubbles or not, but okay. So the kind of story that is best suited to a novel is not one that is necessarily all action, that's visually described in a really beautiful way or really exciting way. It's one that approaches this story differently. So if you're reading a Spider-Man novel and what you're getting is Spider-Man surveying and Spider-Man talking, like, this isn't hitting the desire you have for the cool fight scene, which if we just went into that would be very short.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't scratch the same itch. So it is, if we have decided, it's sort of like the idea that, you know, it's not ever going to really work to try to sell a romance novel where people don't end up together. Like, that's just not going to fly.
That's why Chasing Amy sucked. But yes,
right? And I mean, at that point, it's not a romance novel anymore, right? So in the same kind of way, there are expectations we have on superhero stories that are not, that are built from their roots, which is in comics, right? And there's lots of things you can be like, oh, Scarlet Pimpernel is actually a superhero novel. Okay, cool story. It's not what we mean, though. The modern superhero story is very much tailored for the form of the comic. And so if you try to take that and then you do it in a book, you're making the novel do something that it is not perfected for. And really what would be better is a different kind of story. And so what you see, I think, a lot of is that the superhero stories that succeed more at in novel form are ones that take the concept and look at it from a different angle. The one I saw a lot recently was Hench, which is like a story about hench people.
Villains,
and like it's this, if I remember correctly, the main character kind of just gets this job like to help pay for grad school or something like that. Okay, so this is like a different kind of character. Yeah. It's a character who's not doing all the big flashy action necessarily, but they are involved in this, right? No doubt. So it's not that sort of thing, like take a position that's unexpected or approach it in a way that is not sort of straight on, right? Because you're never going to win trying to tell the story that's not meant for this form.
What I will say also, that Jim Butcher Spider-Man novel that is pretty good is mostly about Peter running for his life and being afraid.
Yeah.
It's a lot of him not running, and not fighting, actually, and like still trying to be brave and trying to be a hero and like, you know, confronting death and the inevitability and basically accepting the fact that he is not going to make this out and it will be his last battle. And it's just very much that.
Yeah.
And, again, you know, and talking to the Black Cat about that.
I forgot what the name of that one, The Darkest Hours.
Yeah, man.
It's a good title.
It's a good title.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a good title. It's a good book. But again, it wasn't a lot of spider sense thwip, thwip, thwip. Yeah. You know, there was a lot of like, oh shit, he's going to eat me.
The Brandon Sanderson did one. It was a YA novel, Steelheart. It was in a series, but like that one was a different one where like the opening thing of it was like a kid at a bank with his mom, and then all superheroes decided that they were gonna simultaneously be evil, and so viewing that moment, not all of them simultaneously, but
this is something you gotta like read to appreciate. Yeah.
but like again, it was like I didn't finish the book. I read the first couple chapters, but like it was a different thing. Like this, superheroes were the backdrop of it. And I do think that you can do a superhero-like story in novels, but you're not going to have the blue spandex and the capes, most likely. Like, you can find ways of telling those types of stories in ways that work better in the medium, I think.
Yeah. At least it's not going to be, like, heavy combat. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other thoughts on that?
No. Mm-hmm. It'd probably be interesting to think about other actually, I will throw this out. I was talking to someone recently about heists. Ooh. And I think that what we truly love and think of fully as like the perfect heist is only doable in a movie. And I'm always disappointed when a novel takes the movie heist structure and tries to execute it, because I think you can't do it, because you can be in people's heads.
I still need to read Liza Locke Lamore, but because that's what I've heard is the best fantasy heist novel.
I would say yeah, but it still does a little bit of la 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 la. I'll tell you what I was thinking later. I mean, it has to if you want that thing where it comes down and there's the turn and everything's the worst, but then actually that was the plan all along. You have to pull that trick. Right, people love that sort of Ocean's 11 like badass heist thing. It really doesn't work in a novel the same way it works in a movie, and you'll still see people be like, but you can do it like this, but it's always involves tricking your reader. I think
don't
be wrong, I would love to see it, but
you think you could do it, it's just not omniscient, like if you just don't, you don't get in anybody's heads.
But I think you'd have a different reason it was hard to sell. But like all the ones people will point out, like Six of Crows is one that people point out. It does a huge like trick you, kind of like, oh, she just doesn't think about the fact that she knew this was going to happen, kind of thing.
Honestly,
it's great until that point.
Remember yeah. a while I was working on a project that was like, it's Harry Potter meets Ocean's 11, and like mm-hmm. that was one of the reasons why I stopped working on it, was because I was just, because it was,
I don't
actually
know that it bothers other people as much as me, as established Lies of Locke Lamora.
It bothered me and I didn't want to write it.
That's fair. That's fair. That's the most important thing. But yeah, I do think that is, that one is sort of locked in. You can't really execute that in another form.
Yeah, because I think the whole point about maybe those kind comic. Of things is your, it's like you said in your infinite wisdom, people like to be tricked, they don't like to be pranked.
Yeah.
But like, we
like
know.
To be surprised, they don't yeah. like to be tricked, to be clear.
Yeah. Wait, but it was pranked at one point.
It wasn't, but I kind of like it.
Oh.
I don't know, the t-shirt I always imagine having is, people like to be surprised, they don't like to be tricked.
Yeah.
Well, valid.
Or pranked.
But, yeah, but because the prank implies a level of maliciousness, you know?
Mm. Like, some people where I feel like they pull off a twist and they're like, I thought it was something else. That's annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, you know, you buckle up for an Oceans movie. You Danny Oceans is going to pull a fast one. Like, he's gonna.
Yeah.
You know?
So you doesn't. What the hell?
Yeah, the whole time you're like, what's the fast one? You know what I mean? And then you're watching for visual cues and hints and things. And you're right, if you're in his head, unless you get a lot of, oh, that's going to work great. Oh, they'll never see it coming. the plans in motion. Ah, you know what I mean? You're like,
just sounds like the most annoying 9-year-old.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I agree with you there.
Like, especially when you get, because there's always that moment where like everything goes wrong and they're pretending like, oh no, everything went wrong. That's part of it, right? And if you're in that character's head. Yeah. And it's also like, it kind of means you can't do a lot of planning without, I mean, you could probably do it with some really careful multi-point of view things. But once you get to that point where like the person is there and shit is hitting the fan, you cannot be in their head.
Yeah.
To pull it off.
Well, like, the Ocean's 11 even does this, because when the thing goes wrong, the movie completely changes to who is the bad guy. But it completely changes to his perspective.
Steve Wynn, but not Steve Wynn.
Yeah, Andy Garcia.
Yeah. It completely follows Andy Garcia. And him like talking to his henchmen, and then him telling people to get down there, him calling the cops, like it's all from his perspective in there, until we see that Danny Ocean got the better of them, and then it shows you what happened. And even then, like we couldn't be following Danny or anyone else in that situation. Yeah. We had to not see them.
Yeah.
It's tricky stuff.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, It down to a medium theme, you know, just being able to see in people's heads changes things. And then not every comic book does that. The Savage Dragon, Eric Larson famously didn't from the very beginning.
Well, that was a problem with comics in the early days, is that they had so many thought bubbles. Mm-hmm. Because they didn't know what to do with it, and mm-hmm. once those started slowly going away, like that was when we had like that change in comic era.
You're right. It becomes a very different story when you can get in their minds, and it does very quickly wear when you're like, she'll never forgive me for what I've done. You're like, oh, bro.
There's a lot of thought. I mean, I think that's true in all forms. Like even a novel where I'm like, don't leave direct thought on the table. It's so useful. There's definitely stuff that's like, that's not necessary.
There's eras of Spider-Man that I'm like, I can do without hearing Peter Parker's thoughts.
Yep.
All right. Well, I think that is a good place to wrap things up. Thank you, listeners, for writing in. If you have your own questions, you can send those into writingaboutdragonsandshit@gmail.com, and we'll answer them. And, you know, if we get a big backlog of them again, we'll do more listener episodes. So here we go. Yep. But friends.
It's one of our favorite things to do. It really is.
It really is. We love doing these.
Yeah.
Friends, where can people find you and what awesome things you're working on?
You can find me on Twitter at Aaron M. Evans, and also on Blue Sky at the same name. You can join me on Mondays at 1:30 p.m. Pacific on twitch.tv/dungeonscrawlers for a concentration check, a co-writing space. Come get some work done with me. You can also watch me DM on the same channel every Wednesday at 6:30 p.m. Pacific for Fearful Symmetry, which is a Forgotten Realms adjacent sort of real lot of weirdness. It's getting so good, guys. And also, feel like I should mention, although let me take the dates. I'm going to be at some conventions coming up. Yeah, so I think I'm gonna the order is I will well, actually one of them they want me to wait to confirm because there's website stuff, but I will be at World Fantasy in Kansas City, which is I think October 26th to 29th. It's a very nice, cool, professional kind of writing conference. So if you're there, come say hi. Well, also, I'm going to be at Dragonsteel this year in Salt Lake City, November 20th and 21st, signing books and other things. So yeah, hope I see some tangerinos.
It is I, B. Dave Walters, who's very sleepy because a lot's happening. Find me all over the interwebs at B. Dave Walters Erwar, diligently working on 14-day TTRPG creator. Gonna be rolling that out soon. I'm kind of doing like a website revamp and making the project all at the same time, and that's just a
That's
lot.
a
That's
lot.
a lot, but that's all right because you know what else? I'm a lot. Yeah, but also 14-day writer, still out there changing lives. Save 5 years off your writing journey and covers a lot of the things that we talk about here, especially in some medium specific considerations about, how your story needs to adjust to be a novel or a short story or a comic book or a graphic novel or a screenplay. And beyond that, I am literally Aaron M. Evans' biggest fan. That's all.
You can follow me on all the dystopian social medias at the Trevor. There's an A hiding in there. And I am also on Fearful Symmetry on Wednesdays on twitch.tv/dungeonscrawlers. And yeah, these next few episodes are really good.
I would just like to say, no spoilers, no spoilers. But Aaron was like, I'm kicking around some ideas. And I was like, well, maybe I can help. And then we talked. And all I have to say is, Trevor, I do not apologize for anything else that
You
happened
should it.
the
It's
rest
gonna
of
be
this season.
amazing.
Aaron messaged me and said, I met with B Dave this morning to talk about your plot, and I'm very excited. And that got me so freaking pumped.
Yeah.
He's
I don't feel
gotten
bad about any of
a
it.
little taste, but
Yes.
they have not gotten the full.
Yeah, viewers, next week's gonna be a fun one. You can check that out. But check out the whole series.
Yes.
But yeah, that's where we're gonna wrap things up. Thank you all so much for listening. If you enjoyed this show, the best way to support is by leaving a review on your podcast service of choice and telling your friends about the show. If you have any questions like the wonderful listeners who wrote in today, you can send those into writingaboutdragonsandshit@gmail.com. And if you'd like to keep up to date on the show, you can follow us on Blue Sky at About Dragons. But until next week, go write about some dragons and shit. Boom, boom. Thank you.